We've had thunderstorms. We've had bee diseases. We've made cheese. We've made nettle cordage. And we've done lots of foraging. As always, a busy, busy time. Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, and welcome to episode 81 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Wherever you are in the world, we're all going through this pandemic, and things are kind of really odd feeling for me at the moment. I don't know how the rest of you feel. I know that in different areas of the world, I feel like we're all kind of connected by it, but at the same time, we're all having vastly different experiences of it. Now, we had probably, I don't even know, but off the top of my head, I think it was around 2.5 months of what I would call real lockdown, when everything was closed and you were not allowed to basically leave your house without certain reasons. Now, that has eased significantly now, and it feels like we're almost back to normal. Although, when I say normal, I do mean the new normal. But I hear from all around the world how everybody's experience is different. And for instance, in Australia at the moment, they're experiencing in certain parts of Australia anyway, you know, quite significant lockdowns just coming into place after what seemed to be, you know, relatively good control of the virus. And then, of course, there's lots of varying reports from different places in America, depending on where and who is speaking. But it's a crazy time for all of us. And I wanted to just start by mentioning that so that I could then follow up by just saying that throughout this whole thing, one of the things that has made things much easier for me than I imagine most people is the garden, because this pandemic doesn't affect my plants and it doesn't affect my animals in the garden. And when I'm tending them, it genuinely is life as normal. You know, there is no effect of this pandemic on me or my family when that is the mode that we're in. And I hope that everybody listening to this is gaining some respite from that time as well, whether they are as lucky as I am to have quite a large plot and be able to basically be at home doing these things most of the time, or whether they just have a small container garden on a balcony or something. Just that connection has been so valuable to me, I can't put a price on it. And I hope that you're all gaining that in some degree as well. So I just, that's just something that was on my mind and I wanted to share. But going forward, I've got lots and lots and lots of things that I wanted to talk about today. And I'm going to start with just a walk that I went on last week, and it was amazing. I just went on a small walk, and I found myself about 3 miles from home. And I just discovered this hedgerow that was absolutely, it was almost like a hedgerow someone had planted with the purpose of harvesting, because within about 20 paces, there was elder, which obviously gives us elderflower in the spring and elderberries in the summer. And there was also blackberries. Now, those two are both ubiquitous. They're so common, they're everywhere. But I also found lots of bullis, which are interchangeable, really, that name with damsons. It's a type of plum. It's basically a wild plum. And I found a part of the hedgerow was heaving with those. But we also found hawthorn, which gives us the haws we can make jelly from. I found sloes, and the pièce de résistance was a amazing pear tree. Now, it had only small pears, probably a third the size of the pears you might buy in the supermarket, but they were absolutely delicious. And the thing that excited me most about them was that they were ripe, and they were ripe about a month earlier than I'm expecting my pears to be ripe in the garden here. So effectively what I've done is I've managed to extend my pear harvesting season by a few weeks, because I'll be able to harvest pears from this wild pear tree a month or so before I can start harvesting them at home. And they were delicious. I also found on that same walk an amazing walnut tree, which is probably my favourite foraging tree. I absolutely love walnuts, and I can always use more trees, because it's always a case of, like a lot of things, particularly nuts though, it's a case of luck and timing when you come to harvest them, because you want to get them about a day before the squirrels do, because the squirrels know when they're ready for harvesting. They know when they're ripe. So if you've got a large selection of nut trees or different areas with nut trees in to go and harvest, then it means when you go to harvest, you've got a far greater chance of getting to one just before the squirrels do to get your nuts. So that was just an awesome walk, and I made a video on that walk, which is now available on the YouTube channel, so feel free to go and check that out. You can find Self-Sufficient Hub content elsewhere online in lots of other places. We have a YouTube channel, we also have our website, and now there's our Facebook page and Facebook group. Links to all of these you can find in the show notes. Come check us out. Talking of the YouTube channel, I've got lots of videos gone up or going up recently on some interesting topics, some things that I haven't covered before. So I just thought I'd share them with you, dear listener, in case you wanted to go and find them. I made a video a week or two ago called Chicken Maths. And if you're not familiar with chicken maths, then allow me to explain it to you. But if you, like me, live in a world where most of the people you know keep a few chickens, then you will almost certainly be aware of chicken maths, even if it's not a term you've come across. Chicken maths is the way we tend to start with a couple of chickens, and then we might add two more, and a year later we might add three or four more, but we turn round and instead of the six, seven or eight that we would expect to have, we've actually got 20, because that's how chicken maths work. They tend to multiply through all sorts of different methods. And I've done a video on that topic. It's a bit of a comic turn, not my usual style, but hopefully you'll find that enjoyable if you want to go and check that out. Speaking of chicken maths, I've got two new birds that landed on my doorstep. I wasn't expecting to get them, I wasn't looking for them, but I've now got a specific breeding pair of meat birds. Now, there is a factory near me that produces meat birds, table birds, and I'm not really sure of how it happened, but I was doing some work as a builder, some building work, and I'd been on this property for a number of weeks, so I'd got to know the people there. And there's a lady there that keeps her horses on this property. And somehow, I'm not sure of the details, but basically these two birds, a male and a female, table birds, were left behind when all the other birds went off to slaughter, and she rescued them. But she didn't know what to do with them, so she said, "Do you want them to me?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." So they are now going to have a happy breeding retirement. So I'm keeping them as a pair, and we're basically going to rear their young. We're going to hatch their chicks, and we're going to raise them up as table birds. Because until this point, although we did produce some table birds, we didn't really have a specific way of doing it. It was just the byproduct of our egg laying and everything else. The odd male bird that wasn't required would be one that ended up as a table bird, but now we've got an actual supply of table birds, albeit a slow one, you know, because they're not going to be, she's not going to be a prolific layer, she's not going to lay a tremendous amount of eggs, so it's not going to be that I'm getting a lot of birds, but Hopefully that's going to work out quite well. They're still quite young. She hasn't started laying yet, so I will keep you informed. Now, the breed, they are a Cornish cross, so they seem quite healthy. They're not going to be overfed, because when they're overfed, that's when they tend to develop the problems with weight and their legs literally not being able to support their weight. So we're not going to do any of that. We're just going to allow them a nice healthy diet, and they're going to have a little free range run, and we're going to basically harvest the eggs to turn into meat chickens. So another couple of YouTube videos you may be interested in. I've recently posted one on making nettle cordage, making string from stinging nettles. I'm super proud of this video, because not in any way is the actual quality of the video production any different to any of my others, but it's something that I was trying for the first time, and I've tried it for the first time on camera to try and illustrate, obviously, hopefully going in, trying to illustrate how simple it is and that everyone could do it. And that is exactly how it went. So I was super thrilled with the results. It's really, really easy. It's far easier than you might think. So if you are short of something to do for half an hour or so, watch the video and then go and make yourself some nettle cordage. It is just so rewarding and just surprisingly easy. I do think it's something everyone should try at least once, because I think you might be surprised by how fun it is and how much you enjoy it. I've also made a video on cheese making with my cheese making process here, which I filmed over the course of 3 days. That is probably uploaded by the time this episode airs, but if not, it will be very soon. And I've also made a day in the life video, which was basically covering me for a regular Saturday, and I filmed that last Saturday, and the footage, even when it's all edited down and boiled down, is over an hour. It's about 75 minutes long. So the reason I'm mentioning that to you guys is I'm not sure if there is an appetite for a video of that length just covering what I do here on a daily basis. But I'm letting you know in case you wanted to go and check it out. That will be posted at some point in the next week if it isn't already up by the time this airs. And then finally, I have also been out trapping crayfish. I say trapping, catching is a more accurate term, because I don't actually use traps anymore. I used to, but I've also made a video on that. So we've got crayfish in our local river here in abundance, in absolute abundance. And if you're in the UK, we have a species called the American signal crayfish, which are an invasive species. And not only are they an invasive species, but they actually destroy the habitats of the riverbank for a lot of our native animals, and they introduce diseases that literally wipe out our native crayfish, which effectively have been all but wiped out by these invasive signal crayfish. And so by trapping them, bring them out of our river, you're actually doing the ecosystem a favor. So I've got some of them which I haven't yet cooked. They are currently purging in some clean water, and I'm going to be having them for tea tonight. So very much looking forward to that. Then I will be posting that video as well quite soon. So if that's something you might be interested in, then make sure you head on over to the YouTube channel and check them out. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. So I had some bad news this week regarding my bees. Now, I was due to be bringing my colony of bees home. Now, I'm sure most of you already know, but for those of you who don't, I signed up to a beginner's beekeeping class last year. The idea being that I would attend these sessions, and they were due to run for a period of a few months up to Christmas, and then for 1 or 2 months after Christmas. Now, the before Christmas period was classroom lessons. It was the sort of the book learning side, if you like. And then after Christmas was the practical side, and that was due to start just a few weeks after Christmas. Well, because of the pandemic and the lockdown, they weren't able to happen, and the first sessions weren't actually brought back until just a couple of months ago. So the length of time that this course ran was extended by several months, and the number of practical sessions was reduced from something like 8 down to maybe 3. And I actually attended the last of these a week or two ago. The idea was that after this last practical session, where I'm actually dealing with my own colony of bees in my own hive that I have delivered and taken to the apiary, there's a large site which is run by the Beekeeping Association with which I signed up to this course, and the bees were housed there. They were bees that were given to me as part of this course, as part of the fee, if you like. And I was being taught with a guide in small groups, hands-on sessions about how to actually handle the bees and things like that. Well, the idea was after this last session that within a week or two afterwards, we would be, all of us, everybody on this course, would be bringing our bees home to their forever home, which is obviously for my bees here in my garden. When we were at our last session, we were told that there was actually a case of a disease in a hive that was in the area local to the apiary. So it's actually not local to my house, but local to the apiary. There was a case of something called European foul brood. Now, I won't bore you with the details of that disease, but it's a disease that infects the actual brood of the colony. Now, the brood are the immature bees. They are the larvae that are within the hive, and it basically causes them to deform. And it is quite a serious disease because of how detrimental it can be to the colony, but also how it can spread. Now, it's a notifiable disease. There is a body that oversees this, and they have bee inspectors all over the country, and the bee inspector had to effectively rubber stamp our colonies to say, yes, these are all free of the European foul brood and these can be moved. So it was really odd. It was almost like it was running in tandem with the human lockdown that we're seeing. And in the UK, the human lockdown is more dynamic now. It's happening localized in smaller areas. And it was such, so akin to that, it really struck me. So effectively, we were told that, you know, that area was in lockdown and effectively those bees couldn't be moved until that the hives at the apiary had all been inspected by the bee inspector. Anyway, last Wednesday, I was informed that they actually found a case of the European foul brood within one of the hives in the apiary. Now, had that been one of the hives within my home apiary, if I had several hives and one of them was found to have European foul brood, I personally would feel quite unnerved and quite panicked because I'm not experienced enough to really know how to deal with that. However, this apiary and the Beekeeping Association, some of the senior members there are incredibly experienced and know exactly what to do. So the bees are actually in safe hands insofar as my colony and all the other uninfected colonies, at least. So they're all going to be fine, I'm sure. But what it did mean is that an even more stringent lockdown was placed within the colonies that were in that apiary. The upshoot of it all, the bottom line is, I'm not going to be able to bring my bees home now for at least 6 weeks. So it's incredibly, incredibly disappointing because it's about an hour away for me and an hour each way. So it's 2 hours. And on a Saturday, that does take a decent chunk out of the day when I could be getting other things done. It means I'm only checking my bees once every fortnight rather than once a week, which would probably be my desire in the warm weather, because it's not really of detriment to the bees to open the hive up when it's nice and warm, and it would allow me this period to become more familiar with them, and it was something I was really enjoying. But I cannot control it, so therefore I accept it, but it's just a bit of a disappointment. So it really has delayed when I can get my bees home. But at least they will be safe and they will be coming home eventually. It's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can do it either by sending an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com or by using the link in the show notes to send us a voice message. You can send us a voice message just using your phone. You could also reach out to us on Facebook, where we have the Self Sufficient Hub group and the Self Sufficient Hub page. We're always thrilled to get your feedback, questions, or suggestions for future topics on the show. So, coming up in the garden, I've got a second or third round of seedlings ready to go in. We've planted a lot of our winter vegetables, things like leeks and cabbages that are going to overwinter, and they are coming up really well and looking super strong. So they're going to get planted out in the next week or two. And I think that's something, if you haven't already done and thought about, then it is certainly something you want to do sooner rather than later, because the window's closing on a lot of those varieties now. So have a little think about what space you might have in your garden in the next few weeks, because now's the time to get your seedlings established, ready to go in there when you harvest some of your other plants. Another thing we're doing in the garden right now, and when I say right now, I mean as soon as I've finished recording this episode, me and my family are all going out and we're having a mass harvest. We're going to be harvesting lots and lots of fruit. We're going to be harvesting apples, pears, plums, blackberries, and anything else we can get our hands on, because today is jam day. We're spending the whole day making jam. We do it at least once a year. We're going to be making lots of jams that are hopefully going to not only fill our larder for the rest of the year, but also we are going to sell some of those at our little shop at the side of the road. So I love jam day. I make lots of jams and chutneys. And no, I've been looking forward to today. And if it's something you haven't done, then you need to try your hand at jam making, especially if don't think that you can't do it if you don't have fruit trees, because you can go and forage for all these things. There are an abundance of blackberries out there right now. And as I said earlier in this very show, you can go out and find wild pears, you can find damsons. They're all available and they cost nothing. So go and get them, get yourself some sugar and make yourself some jam. So the last thing that I've got happening in the garden at the moment that I wanted to share is a mole problem. Now, I am at my wit's end because I have a substantial number of moles. I don't know how many, and they are undermining all of my vegetable plot. And I wonder if they are responsible for some of my decreased yield this year. I've mentioned several times that I've struggled a little bit this year with my annual vegetables, and I wonder how much of that is down to the mole problem. So I've started setting traps. I've tried all sorts of different methods that allow the moles to live, but unfortunately, I think I am at the end of the road with that, and I'm going to have to set traps. But the moles themselves won't be wasted, they will be either composted or the pigs will eat them, so there's a use for them. But it's just, I can't go on any longer. They've undermined so much of our garden and so much of the vegetable garden. Every time I walk on it, it just collapses underfoot. So I think I have to deal with that problem. And of course, they're going to want to be there because that's where the soil is richest. That's where I'm adding so much organic matter. So that's going to encourage the worms. So the worms that are going to be naturally drawn to that area and multiply in that area because of all the organic matter I'm adding, that is food for the moles. So I'm effectively encouraging them onto that plot. There's not a lot I can do about that. So that's something I'm going to have to get on top of. Final thing I wanted to mention before I sign off is just to our Patreon sponsors. I'm going to be producing at some point in the near future some online courses and also a book that goes along with the podcast. The book is going to basically be all the things that I talk about in the podcast. And I just wanted to let you know that both the courses and the book, when they eventually get produced, are going to be made available for free to all of our Patreon subscribers as a thank you. So I don't have any sort of, lots of people set up things that their Patreon subscribers get, like t-shirts or whatever, for subscribing for certain amounts. I don't have any of those bonuses available, so I just wanted to make it clear that there would be some bonus available for you guys going forward, as and when these things become available. There's no time scale at present. It's not something that's going to be imminent. It's not happening in the next few weeks, but it is something that's in the pipeline and it will happen. And I just wanted to let you know that you guys will be receiving free copies of anything that I produce as a thank you. And that goes for anyone that is a Patreon subscriber at the time that I release these things. So that wraps up today's episode. Thanks very much for listening. As always, do get in touch. I love to hear from you. I hear from quite a few of you now via Facebook. That seems to be the preferred method of contacting me. But of course, you can email me directly at selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com. So I do love hearing from you guys. So don't be shy to get in touch. Speak to you next week. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.